translation. One of them is Mahaprabhu, and the other two are Prabhus. These two Prabhus serve the lotus feet of Mahaprabhu. Purport. Although Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Nityananda Prabhu, and Sri Advaita Prabhu all belong to the same Vishnu category, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is nevertheless accepted as the supreme, and the other two Prabhus engage in his transcendental loving service to teach ordinary living entities that every one of us is subordinate to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In another place in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Leela, chapter 5, 142, it is said, Ekale Ishvara Krishna Arasabha Britya. The only Supreme Master is Krishna, and all others, both Vishnu Tattva and Jiva Tattva, engage in the service of the Lord. Both the Vishnu Tattva, as Nityananda Prabhu and Advaita, and the Jiva Tattva, Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktivrinda, engage in the service of the Lord. But one must distinguish between the Vishnu Tattva servitors and the Jiva Tattva servitors. The Jiva Tattva servitor, the spiritual master, is actually the servitor God. As explained in previous verses, in the absolute world, there are no such differences, yet one must observe these differences in order to distinguish the supreme from his subordinates. One of them is Mahaprabhu, the other two are Prabhus. These two Prabhus serve the lotus feet of Mahaprabhu. Maybe I can just give me 1 second, I'll transfer my seat. So, some important points there to make. The servitor Godhead, or servitor God, that's the spiritual master, non-different from the Supreme Lord himself, but at the same time, not the Supreme Lord. That was a point of contention when Prabhupada first gave initiations in 1966. Famous story. He had spent several weeks condemning the rascals and fools who all advertised themselves as being incarnations, or, you know, somehow or another they got himself. That's generally the Mayavadi mentality. The neophytes in spiritual life, without a full understanding of Godhead, they have an initial realization that all is one. That there's this all-pervasive energy that everything and everyone is part of. And when they identify with that and they cease identifying with the material world and their bodies, then they think that we merge into that oneness and then everybody becomes the same. And everybody becomes God. That oneness is God. We're all meant to merge into that oneness and become God. So that's a misunderstanding. That's a leap of logic. We may be part of the Brahman. It doesn't mean that we are the whole Brahman. And it certainly doesn't mean that because we're part of God that we are God himself. So making a distinction between God and his parts and parcels is Vaishnava philosophy. The Mayavadis don't do that. And because of their inability to make distinctions, then ultimately they become number one offenders. They advertise themselves as God, you're God, I'm God, we're all God. The dog in the street is God, the poor person is God, Dharidra and Orion. And so many bogus concoctions come from their misunderstandings. So Chaitanya Charitamrita is meant to give us a definitive understanding of who God actually is and what the relationships are between God and his incarnations, between his avatars, between his representatives, and with the Jiva Tattva, as it's mentioned there also. Of course, it mentions there, Prabhupada says that we have to make a distinction between Vishnu Tattva and Jiva Tattva. So the first three in the Pancha Tattva, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nityananda Prabhu, and Advaita Chandra or Advaita Acharya, they are all Vishnu Tattva, different manifestations. And then he says, then there's the Jiva Tattva, Srivas Adi Gaura Bhaktivrinda. Missing from that, of course, is Sri Gadadha, who is the representative of the Shakti Tattva, or the internal potency of the Supreme Lord. That's explained further on in this chapter, the position of Gadadha. But essentially, in all of these manifestations, there's one Supreme, and everybody else is serving. Even Nityananda Prabhu, who is Balaram himself, he is directly the Supreme Lord, not different, just a little difference in color. But he is in a mood of servitorship, whereas Krishna is in the mood of receiving service. So in that way, then, there's this technical distinction. On the spiritual platform, of course, all is one, in the sense that in the Leelas, in the Vaikuntha, well, not so much in Vaikuntha Loka, but in Goloka Vrindavan, the Leelas there, everything becomes mixed. Yeah, and so we have the Supreme Lord becoming a servant of his servants. Krishna is a small child, becomes the servant of Nanda Yasoda. There's one, I remember one time I was giving Prabhupada his prasadam. I was just coming in to take his plate away after he'd taken prasadam in his room in Vrindavan. So on the wall there, there's a painting of baby Krishna carrying the shoe of Nanda Maharaj on his head. So Prabhupada just finished eating, and then when I came in, he was looking very intently at that painting, and then he smiled. He said, "Oh, Yaso Mati Nandan." He said, "This is God, that he's carrying the shoe of his father on his head." So that's really God. This is not very easy to understand. People read the Bhagavatam, and they become confused because they've not read the Bhagavad Gita properly. Bhagavad Gita is the introduction to the Bhagavatam, and in the Bhagavad Gita, it explains there especially that Krishna is God. Yeah. That Krishna is the source of everything, Ahamsa Vrasya Prabhavo, Mata Prabham Pravartate, and also Maya Jakshena Prakriti Suyate Sacharataram. I am the controller of the material energy. So having declared his position very clearly, Arjuna also declares it, that you are Param Brahma. But still, the rascals, they take that information in the Bhagavad Gita and they misinterpret it in their own ways. They somehow or another foolishly come to the conclusion that Krishna is not God. Or if he's God, he's no better a God than we are. But somehow or another, even though Krishna's position is declared there very clearly, there's so many verses where Krishna asserts his superiority over material nature. And that means that he was there before the material nature came into existence. He'll be there after the material nature is ended, this material universe. Still, the rascal Mayavadis claim that the manifestation of the personality of Krishna is due to a combination of the modes of material nature, and it is only a manifestation in the material world. But that is not the statement of Shastra. Shastra very clearly states Krishna's position as being transcendental, and not just transcendental, but supreme. Asamudva. Asamudva. Nothing superior, equal to or superior than. That is Krishna's position. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, similarly, that is his position. He is the supreme controller. He's the supreme personality of Godhead, who is to be served by all others. And just to emphasize that point, then even in his manifestations as Nityananda Prabhu and as Advaita Charya, they're in that mood of servitorship. So in that way, then Prabhupada was explaining in the early days, that was always his main point, that you know, God is not everyone, or everyone is not God. We're part of God, but we're not God himself. And when he was always explaining this, you know, the early devotees were starting to understand that. And then it came to the point where he decided that he would give some initiations. That was on September the 6th of 1966, the first initiations in ISKCON. Not Prabhupada's first disciples. The first one was in 1956 in Jhansi, Haridas. But anyway, Prabhupada said, I'll give initiation. And those devotees actually at that point didn't really know what initiation meant. So they had to ask, what does it actually mean? So then Prabhupada said, it means you worship your spiritual master as God. And then he stopped the class and he got up and he walked out. And everybody was sitting there stunned because Prabhupada had apparently just after, you know, weeks of condemning the Mayavadis, now he was telling them, now you have to worship me as God. So they were very confused. Then afterwards, of course, they went to talk with Prabhupada and he explained that, no, actually, the spiritual master, Shakshadari, he is directly, Shakshad means directly, not just a representation, but he is directly the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And at the same time, he's not God. He is the servitor God, and there's the served God. So Krishna is the served, the spiritual master is the servitor. They're on the same level, transcendentally, but at the same time, there's a difference. So in that way, then, Prabhupada explained the real position of the spiritual master. So sometimes we see the spiritual master is said to be a representative of Nityananda Prabhu. That's also explained that when we come to the transcendental platform, after getting freed from all material desires and engaging in devotional service, we have to develop an attraction for the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda. Yeah. And then once we get an attraction for Lord Nityananda, then we can begin to develop an attraction for serving Krishna. But nobody can come to the service of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or Krishna except through the mercy of Nityananda, at least in this age. This is the idea. So Lord Nityananda Prabhu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he works in that mode as the Guru, Adi Guru. And the Guru is said to be a representation of Lord Nityananda Prabhu. But at the same time, sometimes also the Guru is understood to be a representative or a manifestation of the mercy of Srimati Radharani, because we also say that we cannot come to Krishna's service unless Srimati Radharani allows us that favor. She is the queen of Vrindavan. Nobody comes to Krishna unless they get Radharani's favor. So there's two ways to go, ultimately the same. But there's a verse, Radha Samukha Samsaktim Saki Sangam Nivasanam, that the spiritual master is a representative of Srimati Radharani. So that's Gadadhara Pandit, the internal nature or energy of the Supreme Lord. They are the unalloyed devotees of the Lord, the internal potency. And there's a slight distinction between the internal energy and the pure devotees. The pure devotees, they come to the platform of pure devotional service, rendering service without any selfish desire. But when they advance further or become more intensely engaged, then they enter into a conjugal mode of worship, and that is the mode of the internal potency. So the Shakti Tattva and the Jiva Tattva, there's some slight distinction there. But at the same time, all of them, ultimately, they're all in love with Krishna, and they all serve Krishna as their everything. That's the point. Not that they're challenges to Krishna, not that they think that they're on an equal level with Krishna, somehow or another, they're, you know, able to enact Krishna's pastimes in imitation of Krishna. That goes on in Vrindavan even now, but it's always gone on. There's a class of men, Prakriti Sahajyas, and their idea is, because they're infected with this Mayavadi mentality, they do not make these distinctions that we find in the Panchatattva, So sometimes they misrepresent themselves as being Krishna himself. They have their gopis. They go and they do their parakeet ras, bhajan. They go off in the forests of Vrindavan. They imitate Krishna's rasa leela. One of them pretends to be Krishna. The other pretends to be gopis. And in this way, the whole thing becomes an abomination. It becomes a corruption. And therefore, we see that by the time of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Vaishnavism was condemned. It was considered to be an extremely low-class form of religion and more or less just an excuse for gross material misconduct, sexual misconduct. They take Krishna just to be a kind of debauchee, and if he can do it, why not me? I actually had an exchange one time with one gentleman at a hospital in Calcutta. My daughter had pneumonia, so she was in the hospital for about 9 days. She was in a room with this other young girl. And every evening, this man and his wife would come and see their daughter, and I would go and see my daughter. So we got talking, and he seemed nice enough. And he knew I was an ISKCON devotee, so we talked a little bit about philosophy. He told me that actually the Bhagavad Gita is my favorite book. I read it all the time. I thought, this is nice. This man's a bit of a devotee. But then when we started talking, it was quite different. The reason why he was reading the Bhagavad Gita was because he was trying to figure out how to be like Krishna. Right? His idea was that Krishna could do whatever he liked. And why should he actually told me these very words. He said, why should Krishna have all the enjoyment? Right? So his idea was he was reading the Bhagavad Gita to figure out how to become Krishna, right? Not to figure out how to serve Krishna. So this is the problem. Prabhupada told me, he said that in India, 99%, it's in their heads, this Mayavad philosophy. Very, very difficult to get it out once it gets in. People have no understanding, true understanding, of the position of the Supreme Lord and themselves as his eternal servitors. This ambition, this seed of material desire is there within the heart. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in one of his commentaries, he mentions that jivas, although they have this ability to be able to serve Krishna, they also have this seed of material desire within the heart. And that seed, of course, when it's planted in the material world, Prabhupada says, in the course of the material nature, then it begins to grow. And eventually it becomes a big tree, and one becomes fully entangled in this material world. And then it's extremely difficult to get out. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates, the Panchatattva, have come with the intent of cutting our association with material nature and helping us to come back to our natural position as the servants of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Jai Shishi Radha Gokulananda Ki Jai. And without that, their mercy, it's almost impossible to get out. It is impossible, actually. You cannot get access to a big man except through his entourage. Nobody can walk in. Who's the Prime Minister here nowadays? Cameron. So nobody can just walk into David Cameron's office and, you know, sit down and start chatting to him. Yeah. And he's just, you know, one of thousands of prime ministers and, you know, presidents or whatever's and political leaders. But you can't just walk in there. You have to actually be given access. So in the same way, if an ordinary man can command such, you know, a position, then what to speak about the Supreme Personality of Godhead? We can't just, as they say, storm the gates of heaven. You have to qualify yourself in so many different ways. And when we're qualified, then we're given entrance. This is the purpose. This is the idea. So we get that entrance when that seed of material desire is finished, when it's cut off. Later in this chapter, you'll see the description is there about how the storehouse of love of Godhead is broken open by Lord Chaitanya and his associates. And like a great flood, it will course across the land. And it's an appropriate analogy because when there's a flood, all the seeds that are in the ground can't grow. So in the same way, when there's a flood of love of Godhead, the seed of material desire within the heart of every jiva actually is suppressed. It cannot grow. It remains inert. So in that way also, in our practice of devotional service, the seed of devotional service is, we all experience, very difficult to get out. It's there. It's very powerful. It's got very deep roots. And it's almost impossible by any means or another, penances and austerities and so many other things, to get rid of it. It remains. It's always there, somehow or another. But in Lord Chaitanya's movement, the way that seed is actually dealt with, it, the way that it is nullified, if you like, is by flooding it with love of Godhead. So without artificially or separately trying to kill one's material desire and activity, we simply take up the process of devotional service, especially chanting and dancing. And once we glorify the Supreme Lord and we allow that flood of love of Godhead into our hearts, automatically the seed of material desire diminishes and becomes inert. That's the way that we have to do it. So we have to replace our material activities with spiritual activities. And that was what Prabhupada was very keen on giving us as the representative of Lord Nityananda, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Prabhupada had that ability to nullify that seed of material desire in the hearts of any person that he met. Of course, that also, it's not just automatic. We were on a morning walk in Mayapur in 1976. This was, of course, a few months after the Chaitanya Charitamrita had just been published. Most of the volumes came out in 1975 after that big marathon in the BBT in Los Angeles. So we read that verse there, Sadhu Sangha Savashastra Koi Lava Matra. We saw that, Lava Matra, 1/11th of a second, and you can become perfect. So it was a bit of a puzzle, since we had been engaged in devotional service more than 1/11th of a second, but we still had lots of material desires, and we were not perfect, so how does that work? You know, an 11th of a second is like a split second. So how does that work? That you just glanced Prabhupada going past or something and now you're perfect? So that question was asked. You know, how does that actually work, that lava matra, 1/11th of a second? So Prabhupada gave the analogy of wood and fire. So he said if the wood is dry and you bring it to the fire, there's immediately combustion. So in that way, if a person's ready, yeah, if they're receptive, then when they meet the pure devotee, not anybody, not any guru, not any, you know, yogi or sadhu or whatever, but a pure devotee, then if the person's receptive immediately, then the guru is like the match and the wood is like the recipient or the disciple. So if the wood is dry, then immediately there's this combustion. So in that way it works. But if one is still wet, Prabhupada said, from material contact, then you can bring the match, you can bring the fire. But he said it will go on for hundreds of years or lifetimes, and still nothing will happen. You'll get a lot of smoke, but you won't get any ignition. You won't get any fire. And the smoke, of course, gets in your eyes, it gets in your lungs, it becomes very troublesome. And therefore, the tendency is you want to give it up. Why am I doing this? This is just a lot of trouble and I'm not getting anywhere. I'm just, you know, getting tears in my eyes and I'm choking up. So then we give it up. So Prabhupada said, this is the problem, is that this business of drying, the drying process is, you know, the process of devotional service, the regulations of spiritual life. That is the drying process. But if we don't follow that process properly, he said, and then again put water. Then he said, this business is going on, drying and wetting, drying and wetting, drying and wetting. And it becomes very difficult to make any progress. So yes, we need to meet a pure devotee. And here, the topics of the Panchatattva, the transcendental leelas, and we can become spiritually enlivened. But if we allow that seed of material desire to remain within the heart, we don't overflood it with love of Godhead, and we hang on to it and we nurture it, then there's a lot of trouble. And therefore we find, you know, we fluctuate. Sometimes we're enthusiastic, sometimes we're not. So it's because we're hanging on, you know, to this, we're cultivating this seed of material desire, even as devotees. And that also, that example again is given in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that the seed of love of Godhead, that bhakti lata, can be planted. But it's explained there that unless we cultivate it properly and we're very careful to keep out the weeds, the same process of watering to bring up the bhakti lata will also enable the weeds to flourish. So in that way, then, you get these perverse interpretations of devotional service, the Prakriti Sahajas. They're also chanting. They also think that they're devotees, but they're chanting. They're developing more and more this idea of becoming enjoyers, as Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. So in that way, then, the whole thing becomes perverted. So we have to be very, very careful to distinguish between spiritual desire and material desire. And we do that by following the example and the teachings of the Panchatattva, by coming to the position of being able to make these distinctions between the Supreme Lord, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and his servitors, even Nityananda and Advaita, although they are supreme, but they're servitors. That's the point. So we, in the Krishna consciousness movement, we're learning how to become good servants. That's the reason why we read the Bhagavad Gita. That's what we get from the Bhagavad Gita and from the Bhagavatam, how to become good servants of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Not like these rascals that read the Gita so that they can think about how to become Krishna. Yeah, now let me see how Krishna's doing things and I will also do the same. Yeah, that's not Bhagavad Gita. Yeah, and in India, practically speaking, you'll see that most people, they actually think that the Bhagavad Gita is meant to be speculated about. They never even think that it could be taken literally. It's become so corrupted, the idea of, you know, the Bhagavad Gita, reading the Gita, that people actually think that it's meant to stimulate your mental speculation. And that's why they read it. We have one gentleman, he donated a building to us in Calcutta, and we've got this Bhaktivedanta Research Center. When I come back at the end of the month, we'll show a slideshow on that so you can see what's going on there. But this gentleman, he has an affinity for the Bhagavad Gita, and he actually had us name the building the Gita Bhavan. Of course, his wife is also called Gita. But and he is very attached to her, or he was, but now she's dead. But anyway, his idea was, and he told me, he said, the Bhagavad Gita, he said, this is the greatest book in the world. So I was thinking, all right, this is nice. I mean, this man is particularly difficult to deal with. Shankarshan Nittai Prabhu is here. He knows. He avoids coming. This man is not an easy person to deal with. But when I used to talk with him, he would tell me, yes, Bhagavad Gita, oh, the greatest book on earth. It's so much knowledge, so many things in it. No other single book has, you know, such content. So then he told me that Krishna became great because he spoke the Bhagavad Gita. Right? Krishna became great because he spoke the Bhagavad Gita. What is wrong with that scenario? Yeah. The Bhagavad Gita is great because it was spoken by Krishna. That's the point. Not that, you know, Krishna has to do some act and then he becomes great because of the act that he's done. Krishna is always great whether there's a Bhagavad Gita or not. When we hear from Krishna, that is greatness. That is the, you know, indication of his greatness. But this rascal, he's got it back to front. No. Krishna has become great because he spoke the Bhagavad Gita. And what is the Bhagavad Gita? Oh, I can sit and discuss with my friends and speculate, right? Who can come out with the most novel new meanings screwed out from, you know, the language of the Bhagavad Gita? This is their pastimes. So it's unfortunate, but this is the state practically of the whole world. It's not just India. Even if people don't know Bhagavad Gita, but all over the world we see that people are more or less Mayavadis. They're impersonalists. They have no idea. Even the religionists, so-called, they have no idea, actually, who the personality of Godhead is, what the relationships are that are available with him. They have no idea about the transcendental realm, the spiritual realm, Goloka Vrindavan, Vaikuntha Loka. Any religionist, you ask any religion in the world, who is God? What does he do? Yeah, they can't tell you. Their conception of God, even if they accept, you know, we have to serve God, which is nice, that's the beginning. But generally their conception of God is in relationship just to this material universe. Nothing more. It's all centered on their own bodily concept of life. Yeah, they're living on this planet, living, you know, in these bodies. And whatever understanding they have of God is in relationship to their present material existence. And therefore you have a Christian God, you have a Muslim God, you have a Jewish God, you have a this God or a that. God is one. But we impose or project our state of consciousness onto the conception of God. So we remain in this material world, and therefore, because nobody knows anything outside of this material universe, practically speaking, they don't know anything beyond this one planet, and even on this planet, they don't know very much. But still, that's the entirety of their conception of God. It's all in relation to, you know, his creation of this material world. But that is very, very insignificant. This material universe seems to be such a vast domain, but it's one of billions of universes, billions and billions. And all of those universes, when Lord Vishnu breathes out, then they come out. When he breathes in, they all go back in. Billions of universes. This is God. Yeah, and even Lord Vishnu, Mahavishnu, he is not the full manifestation, not the full quid, as we say in England. He's not the full manifestation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then we get to Vaikuntha Loka. Then we get to, you know, Goloka Vrindavan, which is more vast and expansive than all the rest of Vaikuntha put together. So what's going on there? How do we know? We can't see beyond this material universe, and we have this very limited understanding of who God is. We can't say, who is the personality of Godhead? What his activities are? Prabhupada sometimes, he would give a lecture and he would say, we know. We know God's name. We know his address. We know his phone number. We know all of his friends. All that information is there. And if we just follow the path that's given to us by the Acharyas, Mahajans, then it's very easy, you know, to come to the point of revelation. And that's really the purpose of our activities, to qualify ourselves to receive information. It's not that we're trying to understand God with our tiny brains. Yeah, we'll never do that. Krishna is unlimited. But when we're in a fit state, Krishna will reveal himself to us. He will show us his pastimes and activities, and he'll allow us entrance into that if we are fit. So it's a lot different approach than the Mayavadis, yeah, the impersonalists. They're trying to do it all on their own endeavor. They want to become as good as Krishna. They want to become as good as God. And at the same time, they have this very strange kind of mentality where they can't see that their position is very pitiful and useless. Yeah, they're talking about becoming God. I'm God, you're God, just like that actress, what's her name, Shirley MacLaine. There was some TV interview they did with her, and she was walking along the beach saying, yes, I'm God. Right, you're God. Okay. Shirley MacLaine. So, you know, but the people get possessed in this kind of mentality. They get misled. And they have these misunderstandings. And at the same time, they can't see, yes, what kind of God you are. Yeah, suffering in this material world, you old hag, you know, growing old, you know, having plastic surgery to make yourself look a few years younger. This is God, right? Not God. Yeah, our God is Navayovanam. Doesn't require any plastic surgery, right? Doesn't require to slim off, you know. No, Krishna is the most beautiful personality in all of existence. He's eternally youthful. He doesn't have a big old beard and he's sitting on a throne judging everybody. You know, that's not God. Yeah, our God is this beautiful little cowherd boy who plays in the fields and, you know, on Govardhan Hill with his friends, sporting away, lifting Govardhan Hill. Yeah. Well, the first lecture I ever heard Prabhupada give live was in Sydney in April of 1972. Prabhupada had just arrived. I was a new bhakta. I'd been in the temple about 6 weeks. And Prabhupada gave a nice lecture. Some people came, I think, from the Theosophical Society. And some woman asked about, what about Maya Baba? Most of you won't have heard about Maya Baba, but he was very popular in the 60s and 70s. Another Mayavadi. Yeah. What was he famous for? Something and Be Happy. What was that song? Don't Worry, Be Happy. That was it. He was the origin of that. Don't Worry, Be Happy. Right. He got killed on a motorcycle accident. Right. This is another God. this woman asked about Maya Baba. And Prabhupada, he said, I don't know anything about Maya Baba. He said, I know about Krishna. He said, Krishna is so wonderful that he could lift Govardhan Hill on his little finger. And it was, while, as he was saying that, he was looking at Radha Gopinath on the altar, and he was just beaming. He was just effulgent. He said, this is our God. You can have Maya Baba, but we'll take, you know, Giri Govardhan. Krishna consciousness is transcendental. It's the only transcendental, it's not really a religion as such, but it's a transcendental state that we enter into. Religion is the means by which we should come to that point. Yeah. But religion should not be a means by which we become divisive and separated from others and then fight and kill all in the name of so-called religion. That is not religion. Real religion means that you transcend these material designations, you transcend this material universe. The conception of Krishna is entirely transcendental. His creation of this material world is just a side issue. Yeah. The real business is going on in Goloka Vrindavan. So Lord Chaitanya came to show us that, yeah, to demonstrate practically what real love of Godhead actually is, how the soul becomes fully enlivened in service to Him as the Supreme Lord. So in that way then, Prabhupada, as Lord Chaitanya's representative, he danced and chanted. That's what he did. That was his program. He told us that when we arrived in Philadelphia, he was coming down from Toronto and he was going to New Vrindavan. We were picked up at the airport by Kirtananda and the devotees from New Vrindavan. And as we were driving along, Prabhupada was commenting like that. He said, this was my program right from the very beginning. No talk. You just come, eat prasadam, chant, dance, and go home. No talk. He said, and then he said, later on, Chaito Darpanamajanam, when there's a little bit of, you know, clarification there in the heart, then we can talk. But he said, this was my program right from the very beginning. Just chant and dance and feast, that's all. And automatically everything else comes from that. So Krishna consciousness is a joyful movement. It's a joyful process right from the very beginning. Shushukam, shushukam. Krishna says that when you pratyaksha, when you have a direct realization of it, you realize the whole process is ananda, real ananda, not the bogus anandas. You know, all the Mayavadis, they like to give themselves names, this Ananda, that Ananda, etc., etc. But actually, they're as dry as bone. They're as dry as old bones. Yeah, but this is life. This is juice. This is where the bliss is. But we should not make any mistakes and identify that spiritual bliss with the so-called material bliss either. That we have to be very, very careful about. To understand and experience genuine spiritual bliss, we have to come to the point where all material desires have ceased. They've given up. And at that point, then we become qualified then to perceive genuine spiritual happiness. So in that way, then there's a process. Sadhana Bhakti, although love of Godhead is there, you can't immediately experience it. We get little glimpses of it. But we have to be very, very careful, you know, that because we've had a little glimpse, oh, now I've made it. And then I'm, at the same time, maintaining so many material activities. That won't do. And that is the Prakriti Sahajiyas. Yeah. Sahajiya actually means natural, a natural, by the natural process. But the Prakriti Sahajiyas, they try to experience spiritual bliss while at the same time acting materially, acting for their own sense gratification. So in that way, then we have to be very cautious, very careful. Prabhupada was very strict. How he introduced us to Krishna consciousness, he gave us sadhana bhakti, a process that we have to follow, as he says. If you follow that process, then you become dry. Yeah, this wetting effect of contact with material nature, it becomes dried out. And then gradually, Krishna reveals himself more and more to us, and we become more and more transcendentally enlivened. I hate to use the word automatic, but it's almost like that. Yeah. Krishna is there in the heart of every living being, and I was just listening to a lecture that Prabhupada gave in May of 1972 in L.A., and he was explaining that Krishna is in the heart of every living being. He becomes very happy when he sees someone approaching him and trying to serve him. He becomes very happy. So that's all we have to do. We have to just make Krishna happy, that's all. Do a little service, render some, you know, service to him and his devotees. As he says in the Bhagavad Gita, always think of me, become my devotee, bow down before me. This is the way. Prabhupada said it's so simple a small child can do it, even an animal can do it. Yeah, it doesn't require much, we just have to bow down. We were in France in 1976. The Gurukul kids were all brought in for a special darshan. So Prabhupada was sitting behind his desk. The Gurukul kids were coming in, and one by one they laid flat out in front of him on the carpet, dandavats. Prabhupada was looking, and then they would go and sit down, and he was smiling. So he said, just see? He said, just by doing this, you become 50% advanced. Just by lying down and offering your blessings, you become 50% advanced. So how simple is that? Because we don't want to be guilty of being fundamentalist or simplistic. We have to surrender, and surrender is not easy. Yeah. But if we're in the right association, if we follow the process properly, if we've had the privilege of meeting somebody who is actually pure, like Srila Prabhupada, then the process does become easy. All we have to do is stay in the association of devotees. Yeah, and then just, you know, that strength in numbers, it carries you. When you feel a bit weak, you get strength from your association. So that's why Prabhupada created an international society for Krishna consciousness. Wherever we go, we can be in the society of devotees, and our transcendental service to Krishna can continue. So it's not difficult. Oh, we just have to agree to it, that's all. And if we're agreeable, Krishna becomes very agreeable to us. He's very happy, and he bestows upon us, you know, access to himself. So Lord Chaitanya, in this age, Prabhupada said, there is no offense in the movement of Lord Chaitanya, there's no offense. Krishna, when he came, he demanded that we surrender to him. But he said, when he comes as Lord Chaitanya, there's no demands. Just chant, dance, and be happy. That's all. He doesn't even say surrender. You know, you have to do this, you have to do that. You just participate. That's all. And automatically, then that transcendental bliss will start to rub off. We'll start to experience it. There's that. I think it's on that original Krishna Consciousness Happening album. Prabhupada was saying about chanting. He says, even a dog can take part. So we're all dogs. Yeah, no doubt. But we can become Krishna's dog. That's the point. Instead of being material dogs, we can become spiritual dogs. Actually, in 1974, when Prabhupada came to Melbourne, he had a newspaper interview. So Prabhupada was explaining the philosophy, and he was saying how if we don't take up this Krishna consciousness movement, then in our next lives, it's very risky what we're doing. We may become dogs. So because he was saying we may become dogs, the reporter, because he was envious, he wrote in his report the next day that the Swamis resigned to becoming a dog in his next life. Right? He completely misunderstood it. He didn't realize that Prabhupada was talking, you know, as him to the reporter. But, the Swamis wants, you know, will become a dog in his next life. So Prabhupada said, yes, he said, we are Krishna's dog. That's all we want to be. So Prabhupada always saw the positive side of things, but he also mentioned that's because this man is envious. That's all. Yes, let the Swami become a dog. He's thinking. Anyway, no, that was a different one. That was his HDG is here to hound us. That was in 76 when we arrived in Melbourne. There was another interview at the airport, and that was actually quite a good article. And they printed HDG, His Divine Grace, is here to hound us. Because Prabhupada had explained that, you know, the United Nations, they're simply a bunch of barking dogs. He said that to the reporter. They liked that, actually. And, you know, he explained how this human life is very, you know, valuable and precious, but if we don't deal with it properly, we're running a big risk. We may in our next lives become dogs. The way people are behaving now, they're less than dogs, actually. Yeah, at least dogs don't abort their own kids. I mean, what to speak about anything else? But people have no sense, even, that there'd be reactions to the activities that they're performing. So Prabhupada was speaking like that. So they actually, that time, the reporter captured it nicely, and he did a good report. HDG is here to hound us. Prabhupada laughed when he saw that. And he had that newspaper clipping cut out, and I think he sent it to Jayaprataka Maharaj for his preaching in India. Okay, so it's Rathiatra in Brighton today. Who's going? Anybody? Not many. Really? Wow, you're all in Maya. Yoga Maya. Not many people are going to the Brighton Rathiatra. All right. Anyway, I'm going. And Surishwara Prabhu's going. No, Bhagwat's giving us a ride. So I'm going to finish a little bit early. Does anybody have any questions or comments?